Church.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Shelley, and I am a recovering alcoholic.
Shelley.
Hi, everybody. This is good to be in the meeting again. I've been visiting this meeting more lately, and it's amazing to me that we're running this hybrid, and it's just kind of just post-COVID. You know, I'm grateful for the technology, though, so I was able to invite some of my friends from Salinas, my Salinas Zoom group that I watch and go to very often.
Nice.
They were my lifeline during the shutdown, and there was I was having on a travel assignment, and there were no meetings in my area, so if it hadn't been for Zoom, I would have been in big trouble. So I'm really grateful for the technology and for those that endeavor to do all of this for us, you know, so that we can have a meeting. Just grateful also to Alcoholics Anonymous, the loving, caring God, who I found here in these rooms, and any you wonderful people, you know. This, to me, AA is the fellowship, you know. It's all the wonderful people that come in here, and we all endeavor each day to just stay sober and to learn how to live sober. So I'm really glad that I got asked to do this deal, even though it's kind of nerve-wracking, you know, having to speak, and I get in my head all day, and it's, you know, it's kind of crazy. But I know beforehand, you know, the farther I know, the longer I've got to go through this. So it's always difficult to share my own personal journey, especially the bad part. But
share my personal journey.
Still always good to know that there was a solution for me, and a loving higher power sent me to these rooms. So I know today to save my life. AA continues to save my life. And I think one of the things that I want to kind of drive home tonight in my share is that this is not a revolving door situation for me. I know a lot of people are here, and over the years I've watched a lot of people come into AA, and they come for all kind of reasons. They got kids that they want to give back. They got parents, jobs they want to get off their back. They got the laws. They get the nudge from the judge. They got the invitation from, you know, a higher power, as they say. Just all kind of reasons, you know, try to save your marriage, you know, your relationship with others, just all kind of reasons. But then you got to make up your mind if you're going to stay. That's how you get here. But then you got to make up your mind how you're going to stay, you know. And a lot of people, like I say, they come here for various reasons. But I think ultimately I just kind of sit around and I wait to see which way it's going to go with them, you know. And I see a lot of people leave after they've met certain requirements. And it amazes me that, you know, sometimes you can be put into a situation and not really smell the coffee, so to speak, you know, or have a solution presented to you, and for some reason the light bulb doesn't go off, you know. For me, when I came here, And my sobriety date is coming up in 11 days, my anniversary. So,
all right.
My own 5/5/90 is my anniversary date. And when I came in ahead of schedule because of a lot of unmanaged building in my life. And I realized that God was opening the door for me to get out. And so I stayed, you know. And I hear about a lot of people that come in here and they don't stay. And that wasn't the case for me. But when I came into these rooms, I knew I was in trouble. And I knew that I needed a solution that had not been presented to me up to this point. And I think we all come to the turning point, you know. And we have to ask, like it says in the big book, we have to ask His protection and care with complete abandon. And that's what I did, because I was living with a crack addict who was hiding and lying about it. The only thing I did know was that a lot of our stuff in the house was getting sold. And that's not a good feeling, you know, to see the wedding band go, the vintage car that you gave your spouse go, to see anything that's small in the house, you know, VCR, whatever it is, wasn't nailed down, started in the house. Then the bank accounts, you know, next thing I know, you know, money is disappearing out of my account. I'm still trying to figure out to this day how I got into my bank accounts and check bouncing all over town, you know. And then there was the domestic violence, you know, and I know today that there are a lot of women that have died from domestic violence. I used to, you know, watch the 5 o'clock news, and I'm done watching that stuff.
Yeah.
But I always heard every night the woman had been killed. And I could have been a statistic, you know, and I really didn't want to go out like that. Standing in front of the judges, I don't know why some of you guys stood in front of the judge, but I stood in front of the judge trying to get orders of protection. And I wound up being, instead of going maybe into some of the places some people do jail, I was sitting in a domestic violence shelter, you know, feeling traumatized, experiencing PTSD, wondering when am I going to be able to go back to my house, because they kept putting me further and further and further away, because the first shelter that they placed me in, he found me. And they went ballistic, you know, to find a PV shelter is like cardinal rule number one, you're not supposed to tell others where you're at. So that was a real big breach of security. So then they started moving me further and further away from the home that I had purchased, you know. And it was a lot of chaos and drama. You know, I had an 8-year-old son. I had an infant when I came into recovery, and it was just crazy. You know, I was trying to hold a job down, but I wasn't doing a good job of that, because one of the things that I realized is that, and I say this today, that, you know, in order to be my friend, you had to do the things that I did. You know, you had to drink a drug if you wanted to be my friend, and that's, you know, what I did. But I never connected the dots to the fact that, oh, you know, being around these types of people, now if my life is unmanageable, you can imagine if you're around other people are doing what you're doing. Well, where are they on the unmanageability scale, you know? And then you start wondering why you, you know, get in trouble with the birds of a feather that you're flocking together. And I couldn't make those dots, you know. I didn't think that all of that really mattered until I met the Max. And that's the person who's worse than you are. You know, and you get trapped into a situation that you don't have the skills to get out of. And that's where I was, you know, a couple of times I almost got killed, and that got my attention. And that leads me to something that I wrote down. I took some notes, and one of the things that I put on my notes is the definition, my personal definition of a crisis. I want to give that to you. A crisis is a situation allowed by God to get you to open your mind to new possibilities. A crisis is a situation allowed by, he doesn't give you, put crisis in your life. We're very good at doing that online, right? But he will use that crisis as an opportunity to get you to open your mind and look at some other possibilities. I had known about AA since I was at least a teenager. I had an alcoholic living upstairs from where I lived, and he died of cirrhosis. His son was an alcoholic, but he went to AA, and I used to hear him leaving every night going to his meetings and stuff. And I know one thing, I never saw him drunk. And then I lived with an alcoholic father who was a functional alcoholic, workaholic, and a codependent mother. And there was no peace in my home, you know. And I believe, well, I'm not, at least second generation alcoholic. And maybe third generation, because my dad's father was murdered. And I don't think things like that happen unless things are pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Something's going on. So I could possibly say I'm third generation alcoholic, you know. There's something else that I want to say about AA. It's a way of life. This is not, again, the revolving door. So for whatever reason that you get here, you might want to while you're sitting here and feel like the judge is wasting your time or whatever your reason is, you might want to consider some of the tools and, as you say, the things that we lay out for you here, that, you know, what we share with you as something that may be something to really take a look at. Because this epidemic of alcoholism and drug abuse and the way it ravages through our families, we all know today this is a family disease. You know, it affects the whole family. There's no way you can be an alcoholic and not of the real class, you know, meet that criteria and it not affect the people around you. You know, I haven't heard a lady say in a meeting today she's very angry with her husband and just chose drinking over taking his medications, and she found him at his hardest. And he died a few months ago, and she's alone. You know, and that, you know, it's something, I hear a lot of comments in meetings that make me think, you know, that could be you, that you're eligible to. You know, I'm not exempt for any other tragedies or things that go on in life. You know, the only thing that keeps me from it is sitting in these rooms and choosing to listen to you guys and believe that it could get worse if I choose to go back. You know, and for me, we read a meditation today about self-love, you know. And for me, self-love started when I made a decision to really dig my heels into this program and say this program has something to offer me. You know, there were people in here who were honest. I didn't learn honesty at home. I learned from my mother, don't get caught, and from my dad, whatever it takes. If that's morality, excuse me. You know, that is not morality. You know, especially that don't get caught one, that's just, you know, don't teach your kids that stuff. Tell them that there's a right and a wrong, okay, and they need to think about doing what's right. But that's alcoholism, you know. We, I don't know about you guys, but I broke a lot of rules, and that was the normal way of life. You know, how much can I get away with? It was really, you know, how much can I get away with? You know, and I looked at my first drink and my last drink this week because of a story we read in Libby's sober book. And my first drink was, and it kind of reminds me of this story of the movie The Wizard of Oz when I was growing up. Because before I had that first drink, I was running away from home. And Dorothy, she was running away from home. And she met a crisis, right? She wound up running away from home, and a twister comes into her neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. And she couldn't get back home in enough time to get into the cellar where it was safe, so she wound up getting into, you know, going into the house, and that house took off with the twister. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I call a crisis. But my, you know, it happened to me because I was running away from home. I was trying to get away from the arguing and fighting and the cussing that my dad and my mother would do all the time. I don't think they were like a loving married couple. They were somewhere between business partners and slave and servant, somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, they were not the kind of people that, you know, you saw them kiss when, you know, he came home and they hot Ozzy and Harriet stuff, throw that out. That didn't happen here, I did. And so I would run away from home a lot in high school, and I would go over to this girl's house, you know. So they have a party, and they strike the punch. Of course, I didn't get that memo, right? So when I'm drinking the punch, thinking it's punch, next thing I know, I'm like inebriated, and I wasn't quite clear why. You know, sort of like the slip of Mickey and you drink when you go to the bar. Okay. So, and I knew with that first experience that alcohol was not a good thing for me, because the next thing I know, I find myself upstairs in the bedroom with her brother. Now, we didn't do anything really bad, but I was kissing him, and I didn't plan on crossing those boundaries. But that was my first encounter with alcohol, and that's where it got me immediately. So can you imagine, by the time I get to my last drink, how much of that had gone on in my life, you know? How many times, how did they say, it takes you where you don't want to go, keeps you longer than you want to stay, and makes you pay more than you want to pay. That's what happened to me when I did that. You know, and the last drunk was, you know, it was trying to figure out how I was going to get home from the north side of Chicago under the influence, and I knew I was seeing double when I got in the parking lot. How am I going to get like an hour and a half home? And my solution to that problem, it wasn't to not drink and get a cab. I didn't think like that, you know. It was how am I going to get my car home was more important than how was I going to get me home. So I tried driving that vehicle home. And my solution, the side streets. So it took me even longer to get home using the side streets. You know, that's my thinking, though. That's, you know. So I already knew that when I drank, I would have trouble driving and have trouble with boundaries in relationships. You know, to the point that, you know, I wound up in a very, 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 very sick, unhealthy relationship that brought me to my bottom. So when, you know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, by the suggestion of the very, very, very sick person in my life, which goes to show you, even your enemy can give you a suggestion you can use. Mm-hmm. Okay. Of course, I wanted to slap him. I didn't. But I figured I could really fix him if I go get the damn help he told me about. So, and that's what I did. I went to shop, you know. When I walked into AA, you guys were being honest about what was going on in your homes. You guys were being honest about alcoholism. You guys were actually not hiding and lying and stuff. And it was disarming for me. It was disarming for me. For people, like I said, you know, to tell the truth. You know, because I was taught indirectly to lie. You know, if you can't be yourself and you can't tell people at home growing up what's really on your mind, then you're really being taught to be covert and to be dishonest. If I can't be honest, then I'm being taught to be dishonest indirectly. So I had trouble telling the truth. You know, I had trouble talking altogether because a lot of time my mom was trying to do damage control on my dad, and she didn't want us bringing stuff up to look, you know, because mom, she had to shut up a lot, so I never learned to communicate, you know. And we certainly didn't tell people what was going on in our house. So it was not a very open life to live. It wasn't a real healthy life to live. So I ran away from home, got caught in Swissburg, so to speak. You know, I landed in addiction land, I guess you could say. And you know, I would like to say this, that all of this time, now mind you, I was sent to church, so I did have a knowledge of God. My parents didn't want to go, so, you know, luckily, and thank God there are little churches on corners, you know, back in the day, so you could just walk to church. Well, if it hadn't been for that, I would have never met God. You know, and the one thing that I didn't know that was a value that I learned later was that when I was there, when you're in the presence of God, it's peaceful, you know. And when I left that environment and finally came into the rooms, God said, go back, you know. And I went back. And when I went back, immediately I recognized the peace. And I said, oh, that's what God is. God is that peace that I had on the inside where I didn't need to use drugs and alcohol. I just needed Him, you know. And I found that again when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did exactly what they told me to do because I was desperate. I was going home to this crack addict who was violent every day. And I stayed in meetings all day. They told me to make meetings regularly. That's what I did. They told me to get a sponsor. And I was in meditation today and said, get a good sponsor. And I want to kind of put a little twist on that. Get a God sponsor. You know, pray for a person to sponsor you so that God can lead you to someone that's really going to be committed to you. Because how many of us know about abandonment in relationships? I mean, I do. You know, I don't think God put me into a recovery situation for me to continue that cycle in my life. So now he wants me to build healthy relationships where we can stick and stay and support one another. No matter what. No matter what. And if God sponsors that person who's going to invest in you. I don't need people to just keep abandoning me in my life. You know, and I'm not only if I sponsor someone, which I was complaining to God this week about a sponsor and a sponsee, and God told me I was really surprised. Sometimes he just listens to my stuff, don't ask. Y'all get that sign from God, you know, because you know you should be complaining in the church. But I knew I'm not there yet. So if I was complaining about, and he tells me, he says, Shelly, I didn't see you that sponsee. Light bulb moment. No wonder it stopped working out. Or better yet, who would even think to allow God to manage those kind of things in your life? Right? You consider that maybe before we say yes to a sponsor, we pray about it. Or go talk to our spiritual God or our sponsor. Should I sponsor this person? Last of all, God, should I do this? You know what I mean? And I know better. I've been in this program, you know, for 24 hours to know that God is supposed to be running my show at step three, right? And I'm like, wow, I'm way off base again. God, you know, how can I even forget the notion that you're not guiding the relationships in my life? You know, that I should be letting you pick and choose who stays in my life and go. How many of those sick relationship lessons have I not learned at this point? You know, I'm just still letting that get open, leaving it wide open, right? You know, one thing, too, that I learned this week is God wants me in this program to take back my God-given power that he gave me. Because I was really good as a codependent, you know, because I'm not only learning how to drink from my dad, not to smoke from my dad, and how to be a workaholic from my dad. I also learned how to relinquish a lot of control, you know, like my mom. She always, I mean, how many women stand around and let's kind of cuss you out every day? It's got to be something wrong. You know, that's not healthy, right? I mean, at least don't talk to me like that. Don't talk to me, but not like that. You know, but my mother didn't know how to do that. She didn't know how to set boundaries on me. Right? Yeah, so I didn't learn how to set boundaries on me. And I leave the gate open and allow all kind of stuff in and out of my life until the manageability hits. And I'm willing to let it go. I then I'm willing to stand up and start saying, okay, we're cleaning the house. Everybody gotta go. And I do that periodically because I have a very easy tendency of leaving my emotional, spiritual gate open and let all kind of junk come in. You know, but AA has taught me, you know, I can't cry victim. You know, whenever I complain, they said, because you let it show. Well, this and that, that's going on because you said it. You know, I'm allowing a lot of stuff to happen in my life. And if I don't want it, I know how to get I need to know how to get rid of it, you know. And it started with me with getting rid of the alcohol. And then I was already in bad situations. And you're like me, you spend your first year of recovery staying sober and getting out of bad streets. You know, I was saying that I'm trying to move my life up to get to a point where they say, oh, don't get in a relationship where you are. It took me 2 years to get out of a relationship and, you know, not get to get in a relationship for a year. So I came in with a lot of baggage, you know. But God is showing me slowly and surely how to take back the power in my life. And it started with staying sober and keeping these meetings and feeling good about myself and started feeling that momentum start, you know, where I can, oh, I think, you know, maybe I can stay sober another day or stay sober. And something hit, you know, and I go through another bump in life and come out on the other side sober. I'm completely, you know, this thing might take hold, you know. After the first 4 months that I kind of spent in here watching you guys, because I didn't think you were sober anyway. I'm used to being lying to you, say you're sober, but I, you know. Right? So I watched you. I'm waiting for somebody to pull one out. I'm waiting for somebody, you know, their computer break down, we're going to go get one. You know, you get fired, we're going to go get one. You know, your car, you have a wreck, we're going to go get one. You know, I just kept waiting and waiting. And then people were serious about it. Oh, they're actually not lying, right? That was so refreshing, you know, for people to start telling you the truth, you know. And I started to trust the people in these rooms, you know. And to this day, I still trust you guys, especially those of you that have made AA your home. You know, I know that you're here for the long haul, and we're not going to be in and out next week. And no matter what hits, we're going to still be here, just like COVID. When that hit, we're still here. You know, a lot of us haven't gone anywhere. You know, and we've gone through a lot of stuff. No matter what happens in life, we're still here, staying sober, you know, working this program. There's a couple of other things I wanted to mention tonight. Mention a little bit about sponsorship, so please pray about your sponsor. And then expect to be offended by your sponsors. Because think about it, if every time your sponsor says something to you that you don't like, you'd be looking for sponsors every week. Most of my sponsors, I tell my sponsor, I call her up, oh, I'm miserable, I'm supposed to make the phone call right before I think about drinking. I call her, oh, I'm miserable. She, oh, you're miserable? Oh, now I'm getting somewhere. Oh, well, thank you. I needed to hear that today. I'm miserable, and you're saying we're getting somewhere. What she's telling me is I'm starting to feel. Mm-hmm. And because I am feeling, I'm not willing to put up with a lot of stuff anymore. That's a good thing. You know what I mean? It'll make me solve my problems when I get in some pain. It talked about in the meditation today about, here, so I always felt isolated and lonely. I drank to dull emotional pain. But through staying sober, that's the cornerstone right there, putting up the first drink, then having a good, and I put it in there, God sponsor, and working the 12 step. Another reason why I feel like we should pray about sponsorship, and don't put it, you know, this whole notion of it, don't write that off. When God has sent me sponsees that I know He wanted me to sponsor, it's like this supernatural door opens up. And then all the things that God has deposited into me, He allows me to deposit into them. And right after that person, the situation I complained to Him about this week, He immediately sent me a God sponsor. And the difference is night and day. This is a person I have to keep arguing with, fighting, begging them to call me, all kind of stuff. This person, like, immediately, when can I meet with you? You know, how often can I meet with you? They're consistently showing up. You know, they're doing the assignment. I'm not having to twist anybody's arm doing any of that stuff, you know. And I started to see the value in just, you know, letting God run my life, including my relationships, you know. And I hope to keep building relationships with more sponsees like that. You know, and it says in the big book, people aren't ready to, you know, don't make it worse for next time. You know, we want to make sure that we're not stopping a future opportunity to help them get sober. You know, but and in this situation, she immediately sobered up. She was struggling when I talked to her at first. And that within 2 days, she was sober, and she's been sober all week. So you have the ability in what you share and what God has put and invested on the inside of you. When you give that message away to the right person, it's going to pull them out of her and gates of hell that we talk about we don't want to go back to. And that the religious people, you know, they pray not to go there, pray not to go back. And we're pulled, we can literally, the same thing that happened with Eddie Adil. Remember, he showed up in his door and he wound up never drinking again. Because he got deposited something in him and God. And these are the kind of seeds that I'm planting in the program. So I take the whole program seriously and the people invested in me. And my last sponsor, who I lost 2 years ago, I had her for 7 years. And she was an old timer. She was real big on the big work. She was real big on teaching the tradition. My sponsor, I had a good relationship with her, and I had to, like, leave my home for 4 days. She put me up. My sponsor, I went to at least one meeting a week where she chaired it. I always went to her meetings. And if I wasn't doing that, I was doing 8 to 9 period of messages to the deals with her. And I always picked her up to, when she couldn't drive a lot after a while, I always picked her up to the meetings. And that's the kind of people that I want in my life today. I don't need a lot of, you know, chaos and drama. I need good people in my life who are going to guide me. I trust them and know they have my best interests at heart. Let me see where I am on time here. Swing against it. Okay, I'm going to start wrapping this up and saying that, you know, this is a good opportunity for you to sit down and meditate as to what can AA really offer you. And we're here, we have a primary purpose, and that's to stay sober. And some of us take that seriously. You know, there's even in the beginning of some of the openings that we're here to ensure our own survival, first and foremost. You know, our unity first, you know, our personal recovery depends on us staying together as a fellowship. But then after that, you know, the quality of life, survival is important. Because this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. And if I got a real shady kind of recovery, I don't think nobody wants to do that, right? And I don't think that's a really good representation of what God can really do in your life if you surrender. And right now, that's the person who I care about the most, how he feels about me. He's done a lot to straighten my life out, and so I'm very grateful for the higher power that comes to know as God. And I take him very seriously, and I believe that so much is given, much is required. So I don't think God put a lot in me and kept me alive all this time for me to just move on. You know, he wants me to help others, because there's a lot of people out here hurting. You know, so where I can help other people, I'm very big on service, as some of you know. And I'm very big on everything that this program is about. And I realize that some people, they, you know, they come in here, maybe, you know, I always think that I hope the newcomers get a good impression before they go back out, you know. And maybe they'll think that this is a place where they can come back when they're ready. You know, and most of all, like it says in my responsibility statement, you know, that we keep the door. We want the hand of AA to always be there for those that are, when you really got a well-whipped butt like I did. Just, I know a lot of you are here by court order, and that's okay, but I always say I have something much greater than a court order, and that's a well-whipped butt. And see, that never expires. Okay. I always think about my bottom. When I think about, you know, taking this program lightly, not going to meetings, that's not even in my vocabulary. There's two times to go to a meeting, when you feel like it and when you don't. Okay, so get up and drag yourself to that meeting. That's probably the best meeting you'll go to that meeting. And if you're feeling that bad, there's nothing, it's no telling what's under that. And I found sometimes my emotional status, I'm not real clear on what's going on inside me. You know, and that's my most vulnerable for a drink. So because of that, I got to babysit this program. I got to stir a lot of pots. I got to keep my ears to the drum on this thing, because this disease isn't just cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's sneaky, patient, and flipping dead. And we've seen a lot of people go out that they didn't think that was going to happen to them. You know, and it's a lot of young, we're losing a lot of young people. So that might be another reason that if you're young, you consider to stay here. Don't come in on the crisis plan like I did, but you know, you got to have two brushes to get before you finally surrender. You know, but if that's what it takes, you know, thank God for higher powers. It's a lot of long enough to figure that out. So. But then I will close. I want to hear what you guys have to say tonight. Thank you, everybody who came online. Hey, guys.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right, so we're now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many people as possible. We do have quite an audience both here in person and online, so we'll try to do our best to go back and forth and give everybody a chance to share. And at this point, I'm going to go ahead and turn the meeting back over to Shelley. And here's a list of the in-person and then online attendees.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt.
Oh,
thank you, Shelley, for your service. It's really nice to hear you. I'm sorry that you had to go through two brushes with death, but we get here how we get here. I went through my brush with death on August 14, 2004. I admitted myself to Queen Delta Central Hospital. Thanks for the phone action, guys. Wait, thanks, man. We're in a meeting. Your life is at stake. I'm scared to get the first part. So I admitted myself to Queen Delta Central Hospital. I was going there to die. My kids, my liver was shutting down. I was getting ready to die. And I was just strong enough to survive it. I was just dumb enough to believe what I was being told, that there was another way to live, that there's another way out than the way I was living. So I'm going to pull up there a minute and back now. Holly, thanks.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Colin?
Yeah.
How about Butch online?
So Butch, go ahead and unmute yourself if you can, please.
Butch Alcoholic, thanks. Thanks for your share today, Shelley. And met Shelley about a year ago, or maybe a little bit over a year ago. So I'm here just supporting her from a little city that I live down here. But you know, that for me, that sponsorship, you know, that's what saved my life. You know, it took me a while to get a sponsor. You know, so. And I've been coming in and out of these meetings since 1988, you know, but finally got a sponsor, settled down, got things rolling. I have slipped a couple of times, but, you know, this is still the safest hour and a half or 2 hours or however how long this meeting is tonight, you know, and it's just, you know, by the grace of God, I'm still alive and just... A simple program, you know, with simple rules that are suggested. Not anything that is pushed down your throat, you know, but it works, you know, for all the newcomers that are here. Definitely this is a good place to be, you know. For me, it was the last place on the block, but it's also the safest place, you know, on the block. You know, that's why I'm here tonight, and that's why I'm still sober, you know. So I'm an early riser, so I'm usually in bed by this time. But like I said, I'm here to support Shelley and support my sobriety. You know, this is my third meeting tonight. I spoke with my sponsor a couple of times today already, and I had a in-person meeting with him yesterday morning. You know, so definitely this program works, man. So that's why I'm here. My name's Butch. I'm an alcoholic, and thanks, Shelley, for sharing today.
Thanks, Butch.
group of drunks giving me good orderly direction. That's my God here in the room tonight. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. I'm gonna Butch doing service work. Roxy.
I'm Roxy. I'm an alcoholic.
Roxy. Hello. Where do you start?
I was thinking a lot with what you were talking about how Zoom and through COVID and through, you know, all this that has closed us down there. I started online AA back in 2010. So when COVID came, I already was doing audio and video meetings online. I was already in the chat room online. I've got 41 years of sobriety, wow. And I have not stopped. I shared a meeting this morning on emotional sobriety and depression. I did a birthday celebration meeting online this afternoon. I come tonight. I'm in a meeting online somewhere every day to the service. And it's good for my sobriety because I can't, at this point in my sobriety, I can't just say, oh, somebody else can do it. I got this. I can't do that. So, you know, I sign up to speak, and I sign up to chair meetings, and I, every Saturday morning at 2 a.m. Eastern. I'm on a video meeting online, and the program is just amazing to me. I have watched so many things from, joining the Marine Corps and Black Hat Bronco was 41 years ago. Woke up in a blackout on my way to Paris Island, and I thought maybe they'd let me go home, and they didn't let me go home. So eventually I got sober. I didn't get sober right away, but I did the rest of my tour sober. I've, been married for 30 years to death do us part. I lost my husband 9 years ago, raised two boys. I've got grandchildren, and I went to college. I can do anything in sobriety. It's amazing. Thank you.
Hey, I'm
and I've met Matt.
Oh, God. Take a real downturn.
Right on
now. Jared, me? Sorry, I couldn't really hear that well. Yeah. My name's Erica. I'm an alcoholic. You know what? I am just exhausted today, and I just don't even know what to say. Focusing on gratitude, feeling like I'm in a good place right now in the program and in my life, and I'm just being thankful for that right now. So I'm just going to let someone else talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Erica.
Okay, Jerry D. Jerry, you're going to have to unmute yourself. Jerry has left the building.
What?
Oh, no, he's not. No, he's there. He's there.
Jerry G?
Yeah. Jerry, we cannot hear you.
He's turned the video on and off, but the audio hasn't.
Audio as long as just counseling.
Counseling. We'll come back to Jerry if you're having some unmuted.
Okay, how about Anthony here?
Hello. I'm here driving my on my way back from Knott's Berry Farm.
Well, nice.
Yeah, I just want to listen in. I got the family in the back seat asleep, so I'm trying to keep it like minimum, like as possible.
We're glad you're doing this, buddy.
Yeah, I'm trying, man. Even though, like, we got a family outing, I'm just trying to listen in, hear you guys' testimonies.
We're all jealous of you now.
Thank you, Sandro.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Here,
hey. Hey, Sam, I'm called.
Hello.
My name's Leah. I'm not calling. Thank you. Actually, first time I heard you speak, you were nervous.
I just thought that
she started speaking like she knew exactly what she was going to say. And the next time I heard you speak, same thing. And right now, I'm gunshot because you were speaking very to me. And you were nervous before you started speaking to me. Quite honestly, the way that God speaks to you, it really does. And I never got to use my primary relationship. So the first thing I thought would be the GTs for a second. Over here. I really connected with a lot of things you said, but one thing that you said, we're talking about, just where you're talking to people who are, they have decided to stay here and all that. I would relapse on this week, always. Always, Just that thing you said, you're finding that something that I've already found that I know that. It's right in front of me. You know, it's within arm's reach. And I'm just glad I didn't forget that this time. When COVID hit, I relapsed in COVID. So here, over my turn to Sandra. We're right by each other, you know. When you were saying that, I was like, the niece of the COVID staying sober through COVID on there, and I'm like, damn. She's running off me on the question, right? Because I needed that. I needed to be reminded why I'm here for myself. Why I'm here. I need to be reminded why I'm here. That I wouldn't be reminded that I wouldn't be. So I'll get in that mode where I was going to let other things outside of my memory affect me. That's the person I just got the definition of that. I've heard it before, but I've never had it fully explained. I guess I just got it, you know, absolutely. Everything you can't control. Outside of you, everything you can't control. Control what you let, as you stress, how you feel, whatever. Can't let nothing will affect your who you let you let it be. I'm just really glad I'm here. Shelly, you're a godchild. I swear you're a lighthouse. In more ways than one.
How about John G online? John G?
Sunshine. You guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Shelly. A lot of good stuff, sir. Thanks, everybody, for being here on this Sunday night. You know, polish up my sobriety and even love the life I'm living in today with you folks, you know. The steps that give us the ability to build a life that we want to live in, not one that we want to run away from. You know, I went to an in-person meeting here today, and a kid I've been working with, sponsoring, he chaired the meeting, and he did a really good job, you know, and he looked up and he's got a sponsor, you know, but what happens when I go to a meeting, Shelly, when you're talking, I got sober with you. I could feel that, you know. I get sober with you, you know. As I follow you down to where you get to that helpless place, and you find alcohol's anonymous, you find God, you're doing the footwork, you're showing up sober. You're making coffee, you're getting commitments. Just like what happened to you happened to me. I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. Started cooperating with God and good things started happening in my life. And now I've been doing this for a little while and I don't want to fall out of love with this. This is the best thing that's ever happened to John. And Shelly, you've been just a joy since I've met you. It's been over a year. You know, you keep my spirit healthy when I hear you talk. And I try to do the same for others, you know. And we definitely stay away from a drink. We try to do the best we can with life does. You know. Trouble and shit's an equal opportunity employer. I mean, trouble comes when we're not drinking. You know, I'm grateful I got friends, staff, sponsor. I got the literature galore. I don't have to run away from life. And thanks, Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks so much, Sunshine, for being a great example of what the program can do. Thank you folks for having me tonight.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Yeah.
Hello.
Kyle.
My name's Kyle, real alcoholic.
Kyle.
Thank you, Shelly, for your meet tonight. I was thinking about what you were saying about the effects alcohol has on our families, and the effects our recovery also has on our family members. When I would see my family in my addiction, the look on their faces was irreplaceable. I mean, it's regrettable how they look. Just the pain in their eyes. You know, what were you doing, Kyle, with your life? Why are you doing this with your life? That look, you know, the pitiful incomprehensible demoralization was written all over my parents' face. And to see the effects my recovery has on my family, it's night and day. And I appreciate you bringing that up because my parents called me today and my dad's, you can hear in his voice, "What's up, Kyle? How are you doing?" And I'm like, "That's so different than what you want, Kyle." You know, and they told me they were going to give my sister, who I haven't talked to in a couple of years, my number. I guess they got a hold of her. And I'm amazed what God is doing as I take the necessary steps to recover. It's really just letting God do it. It's being serious about that third step and getting in the passenger seat. And since I've been working with my sponsor, I'm giving God all the credit for bringing the right sponsor into my life. Like you mentioned, a God sponsee. I truly think he was a God sponsor. You know, because ever since I got with him and started getting serious and reading the book, my life has turned for the better. I stay here. I get to sit in between my two sisters, three sisters, six brothers, however many brothers are in the room right now. And Bill, especially, like, being involved in service at the Ice House meeting. It's just been so critical for the service part, you know, for me. And it makes me feel valuable somewhat, you know. I remember the only time I felt valuable in my addiction is if I was the one with the money, if I was the one with the dope set. And having that gave me a sense of value. But today I get my sense of value by just showing up. Just showing up and being sober, seeing the look on my brother's faces, like, "I'm glad you're still here, Kyle." You know, and when I'm going through the struggle, knowing that I have, like, an army of fellow sobriety brothers and sisters. So thank you for your share, Shelly. I loved hearing you the first time I heard you speak, and it confirmed everything I already knew, like, God truly speaks through you, Shelly. And I appreciate your share tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle. I'm here, Jerry G. back. Jerry online?
Yeah, I'm back now. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Sorry about that earlier. I was trying to get my headphones to connect, but I had some issues. So, yeah, my name is Jerry, alcoholic. Just wanted to say thank you, Shelly. You know, I always love listening to you talk. You know, I feel blessed to people cross paths for a reason. I believe that. And I believe, you know, I crossed your path, or we crossed paths for a reason, you know. You gave me my first big book, or you gave me my big book, you know, and you blessed me with that, and I appreciate that so much. I just wanted to tell you and let you know that you really motivate me to keep going, to keep staying positive. Every time I hear you speak on Tuesdays, and I really appreciate you more than you probably think. just want to say thank you, you know, and I always look forward to seeing you on Tuesday night whenever we have our meetings with Larry. And, you know, I'm going to keep doing my thing and stay positive, stay sober. I'm 140 days today sober, and I feel good, you know, and it's because of your help, Shelly. I want you to know that. You know, when you gave me that big book, I made a promise to myself that I was going to stay on this track, you know, and keep running this endless marathon of sobriety. So I appreciate you, Shelly, and thank you for sharing with us. I look forward to seeing you Tuesday.
So I have 219 days today.
You are.
Today, I keep saying my life isn't perfect, but it's so amazing today. You know, like I always say, just the difference in the reaction to me. You know, my grandma has been like the main, like, support in my life as far as being the only functioning adult around for the most part. And, you know, it used to break my heart. Like, I isolated from my family when I was in my addiction, but, like, when I put here, the look on her face, like, it hurt to love me. It really killed me, you know, and now when I call her, she answers the phone, and she's just all excited. When I show up at her house, she's just all excited. And that's, like, the most beautiful feeling to me right now. I'm all excited. Today, so I graduate aftercare division on Friday. I just decided today to contact my son's dad on our little co-parenting app that we have. And he's real big on, like, you're not seeing him until you have supervisors. Like, I understand, you know, because for a long time I wasn't what was best for my son. But, you know, I let him know, you know, just in case you're interested, I graduate Friday at this time, this place, and he told me, you know, if I get off work in time, I'll bring him. And don't get me wrong, I don't think he's going to bring him, but the fact that he even entertained that thought and responded is a huge step for me to help. And you know, I was starting to feel like at a plateau, I don't feel like I'm really making any progress, I kind of feel like. So, you know, I kind of stepped it up. I have a couple people I'm working with now. I meet with my sponsor every week. I have service commitments. And then, you know, I worked full time, and the other day I was at work, and my grandma's business partner called me, and her business blessing was her old company car, so that's huge for me. So I picked it up Friday, and it's already been, like, I saw my daughter yesterday and today, and I'm super over. It's little things, but they're so big to me. You know, it's these little things that I get to me. And, you know, as cliche as it sounds, like, life just keeps getting better. You know, sobriety just keeps getting better. Even if it's just, you know, and now I wake up happy to do my morning meditation. I do them at home. I don't do them at work now. I didn't really love my job, so I took Amber's advice, and I started doing my morning meditations, but I was doing them at work, like, oh, I gotta go to the bathroom, sorry. But now, you know, I do them in the morning, and I hit a meeting every day because I feel like I'm really learning things from each meeting. And, you know, I volunteer for things, and I take advice today. I don't know if you guys can tell, but I'm, like, super stubborn. And my entire life, like, I've been on my own my entire life. You know, aside from my grandma here and there, there was never anybody guiding me in life on what to do. You know, I was 8 years old raising me and both my brothers. So, like, there was no guidance in my life. So if you came in trying to be like, hey, you should try doing this, I'd be like, who the do you think you are? And you can't tell me what I was like. I knew everything. I knew so much of everything that all my knowledge got me to be here. You know, today, I take advice. You know, and there's a lot of times where my first thought, I have to remember first thought, wrong thought, because my first thought is like, I'm not stupid. But at the end of the day, is it going to hurt to try whatever it is that you're telling me I should try? No, it's not. It's, I mean, to an extent, you know, I take advice from people now. I try things like doing your morning meditations. I do that now. And, you know, and I noticed that by taking advice, not everything works in my life, but most of the things that I've learned from the people in the room have really changed my life, no matter how big or small, for the better. And it's little things I do every day now, you know? And I started interning today at the Vision. That was
good deal.
So, yeah. And so, so, you know, I'm grateful. You know, when I have service commitments, I'm not like, ugh, I gotta go do this. I'm like, yes. And I have a little stance for that, so like I'm chit chatting. And I'm grateful for that. You know, even on my bad days, I'm grateful for them. You know, because I'm present in that moment, you know, and my God has reminded me to appreciate the good ones. And that's something that I haven't done for a long time. And, you know, like seeing my daughter the last couple of days, just in texting her, like, hey, I'm coming, I'm on my way. And she's like, all she said is, hey, but it's got an exclamation point. I'm like, it's, you know, I'm finally someone that I'm proud to be again. You know, and for the first time in my life, like, this is truly the first time in my life that I don't hate myself. Like, today I love myself. I mean, I'm far from perfect, but today I love myself. And that's all I got.
That's good. Hey, thank you, sir. Hey, we're going to take a few minutes here to just do some group business real quick. So I want to start off with a report from David on our literature. So do you have anything to report, David?
Actually, on the literature front, there's no change. Everything's good.
Hi, David. So one thing to be aware of is we do have a couple of different big books, and I think we have a 12 by 12, or
we don't have a 12.
Okay. So we've got some literature available if anybody needs one. And let me now go to Erica online as our CSR. See if she has a report she'd share with us.
Hey guys, my name's Erica. I'm an alcoholic. So at the last CSR meeting, we talked about the picnic that's coming up. The Founders Day picnic, it is on June 4th, 2022 at Moonies Grove Park, Arbor 9. I have a flyer for that. I will distribute to the group when I'm there. And the next planning meeting is April 20th at 7 at Bridge Street, I'm pretty sure, or online. And it's in the event spot on the Tulare County AA website. We talked about a lot of things. And I'm just trying to think, like, cool stuff that's relevant. But, you know, if anyone feels like they want to write about the step or tradition for the next month that we're on, please let me know. We're always looking for new people to write about your experience with a step or a tradition. I think the next one will be step or tradition 7. What else is there? We talked about stuff at the GSO level from the GSO person. They're, you know, may one day be a plain language AA book. Changing some language in the 12 and 12, some triggering language. And also something called Sign Up Genius, which is to organize 12-step call list. So, I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Erica. Yeah, thank you, Erica. So if any of you have questions for Erica, she's normally here, and she'll certainly be available to you. It sounded like we'll have a flyer for the picnic coming up. She was letting us know about some language changes and possibly some new literature from our general service conference. And then, if you might be interested in contributing an article to the central office newsletter,
They usually feature a short little story about a step or a tradition. And the next one, I guess, that they'll have people sign up for is step or tradition 7. So if you're interested in writing about that, yeah, be sure to get a hold of Erica. And if you need help getting a hold of her, just let me know and I'll put you in touch.
Thank you.
All right. So Dave, do you have any news for us in regard to supplies?
Hey, my name is Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Supplies? Good. I don't need anything right now. We're pretty solid on lines.
Okay.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay. So I'm going to bring up, we had talked in our last business meeting about getting a basket for the central office picnic, and Randy and Leah agreed to take care of that for us. Do you guys have any kind of news for us on that front?
We have not possibly got Rob. We got half of it done. We just didn't quite think probably about 30-something dollars, 31 dollars. So we still have some more stuff.
When will we finish this book this week?
Yeah. It should be done by Tuesday. I'd like to be able to contact them.
That'd be nice.
And Rescue Treasure. They've always donated baskets for me. They might be interested in doing that as well.
Yeah. Okay. So you can get with Leah and Randy.
Add it to the basket?
Yeah.
Some oils and all that, and use some
floating
some flowers. They float. They're yeah. Like they light up. So is it for relaxation, meditation,
and serenity meditation type of thing?
Oh, I get it. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Because the Serenity Seekers, yeah. And so we had agreed back in March to a budget of between $75 and $89 to spend on the basket. And you said you've got half the stuff for about 30 or so. So we're doing real good. We got
Can you use like 10% at Target if you want to make
it? Look at that. Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.